Congress has a busy end-of-year to-do list, and there appears to be some progress on a few key items. Congressional leaders say they've agreed on a way to raise the debt ceiling, and an important defense spending bill passed the House last night. There's still uncertainty, though, on Democrats' top priority, a $2 trillion social safety net and climate change package. It's the week in Washington. We'll talk about those stories and more, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you glad to see this apparent compromise on raising the debt ceiling and how it's done? Do you think Republicans should have held out to make it more difficult and put it more on Democrats to raise the limit on their own? Have you been watching this Defense Authorization Act? Are you glad to see members of Congress from both parties come together on an item like this? In general, do you want to see more compromise between the parties on key issues facing Congress? You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Tolu Olorunipa is a political investigations and enterprise reporter for The Washington Post. Tolu, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Well, I want to start out with a listen to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi talking about the deal to raise the debt ceiling I just mentioned. Here she is at a press conference earlier today.
The legislation we passed provided a process under which we could pass, lift the debt ceiling with a simple majority rather than 60 votes in the Senate.
All right, we keep having these debt ceiling deadlines coming up. Tolu, what is changing here and how Congress can increase this thing?
Well, one thing that is changing is that there is more pressure being put on Republicans to not essentially vote for an increase to the debt ceiling because, among others, former President Donald Trump has said that that is a negotiating chip that they should not give in so easily to the Democrats, especially since Democrats want to use the additional cushion from the debt ceiling to push forward with a pretty expansive social spending program. So there is a little bit more pressure, but it seems like the alternative of allowing the United States to default on its debt is a bridge too far for a number of leading Republicans. So they're coming up with some kind of workaround where they will be able to allow Democrats only to vote for this measure to increase the debt ceiling, but they won't essentially stand in the way. So it's something that we go through every few months because there are these major ideological differences between the two parties about debt and deficits and how much money the government should be spending. And it always seems to take us right to the brink of a disaster. But at least for the past several years, we haven't gone over that cliff. We got pretty close to it almost a decade ago, but we didn't go over. And, you know, we suffered the downgrading of our credit as a nation. That was the closest that we've gotten to sort of the siren that would be a default. But every few months, we still get close and tiptoe to the edge. And it seems like we're getting closer and closer, in part because there's so much political pressure among Republicans not to allow Democrats to move forward with their social spending agenda.
So this is a little wonky, Tolu. I want to make sure I have this right. Some Republicans in the Senate voted not directly to raise the debt ceiling, but to say, we're giving you enough votes now so that you can vote to raise the debt ceiling without us later. Do I have that right?
Yeah, that's essentially right. It's a multi-step process in part because of these political considerations that Republicans have. So they're essentially saying, we're not voting for the debt to increase. We're, you know, basically just allowing Democrats to vote for it. And one part of this measure is that when, you know, Democrats do eventually vote for this increase, they're going to have their names linked to a number, a specific number that's likely going to be, you know, above $30 trillion, where the national debt is. And, you know, some Republicans are going to use that number against Democrats, especially against moderate Democrats, saying, look at how these Democrats are spending all of this money, raising your taxes and driving your descendants and your children deeper into national debt. Look at how they voted. Look at how many times they voted to raise the debt ceiling. So it really has become kind of this political game, even though it's a very serious subject. And you know, it would be calamitous for the nation to default on its debt. There'd be all kinds of waves and aftershocks that would impact the economy and cause people to lose jobs and impact people's retirement funds and all of those things. But right now, it seems like there's a bigger political debate taking place far removed from those consequences.
Talking to Tolu Olorunipa from the Washington Post, looking at some of the top stories in national politics, focusing on Congress right now and some bills being passed. Jimmy is with us now in Valley Junction. Jimmy, hi.
Hello. Hello, gentlemen. Yeah, I just had a comment. The Defense Authorization Bill just authorized, I think it was $768 billion for 1 year for the Department of Defense. And, of course, with the Build Back Better and the infrastructure bill, that was over 10 years, and it was only, I think the infrastructure was 1.2, and maybe the Build Back Better is about $2 trillion. But there wasn't a peep in the media about the size of the defense budget, and that's just 1 year. And I just think it shows you that, what gets focused on and what doesn't. And I'll take my comments off there.
Jimmy, thanks for the call. Tolu, Jimmy, talking about that National Defense Authorization Act, 768, I think is the right price tag. I don't have it in front of me right now. Can you tell us a little bit about that bill, first of all, before we compare it to the spending packages?
Yeah, this is another annual thing that Congress has to do. In addition to raising the debt ceiling every once in a while, every year they have to pass a defense spending bill to talk about and describe where the Pentagon, where the Defense Department is going to be spending the hundreds of billions of dollars it gets to essentially to keep the country safe, to fight the various conflicts that the United States is in, to station troops overseas, to protect the homeland. And the caller does make a good point, because sometimes it's very easy for those very large numbers to get glossed over just because it's something that we do as a country every year. We are far and away the largest in the world when it comes to defense spending. We spend more than any other country and several other of our competitor countries combined. But it is something that has become kind of an autopilot thing, for lack of a better word, both in the media and just in the public consciousness, because we do spend hundreds of billions of dollars every year to essentially keep the country safe and to keep other countries safe and to do all of the things that are done that the Pentagon does. Sometimes there is a question about whether some of that money gets wasted, whether it could be better spent in other places, and how it compares to what we do in terms of spending for education or spending for childcare or spending for social programs. And the caller does make a very good point that there are a growing number of people, especially among the progressives in the Democrat Party, that are saying, it's time to maybe scale back some of that defense spending and see if we can put some of that money to better use elsewhere. Do we really need this many fighter jets? Do we really need to have so many people stationed all over the world? Do we need to be involved in so many conflicts? And that is a question that I think is going to creep up more and more, especially as there are growing questions about debt and deficit, even among some moderate Democrats. And that's one of the reasons President Joe Biden has had some trouble getting his social spending plan through, because there are some Democrats that aren't in favor of spending that much money right now. They're trying to figure out how to get those Democrats, especially Joe Manchin of West Virginia, on board so that they can move this agenda forward.
Let's bring out another caller now at 800-642-1234. Denny is with us in Waupaca. Denny, hi.
Yes, hi. I'm a data guy, and I voted for a number of Republican presidents. But you can look it up, and 60% of our American debt was created on a Republican's watch, and 75% of it because of a Republican's watch. Our last president created $3.8 trillion in debt before COVID. So when I hear this talk, and I voted for more Republicans than Democrats, okay, that's not my point. When I hear the point, I think the Democrats do a horrible job of explaining where debt came from and who really created it. I'd like to just some comments on that from your guest.
Denny, thanks for the call. Tolu, the blame game on debt.
Well, that is a blame game that we can expect to continue to happen for quite a while. The caller is right. And, especially when we talk about the last president, former President Trump did add to the national deficit. He did cut taxes. He did continue to increase spending. There was not very much done to tackle any of the issues related to deficits and debt. They just continued to go up, even when the economy was growing, and especially when COVID hit and the economy stopped growing, and we were spending a lot more money because we had a pandemic going on and so many people out of work. The debt just increased, exponentially. And there have been a large number of Republicans who have increase the debt while they're in office. And then, when they get out of power, there's all of this focus on, we're spending too much, the debt is too much. Now, obviously, Republicans have different ideas than Democrats about, you know, where we should be spending money, and maybe if we're, you know, increasing the deficit because we're cutting taxes, that's a better thing in their mind than if we're increasing the deficit because we're spending and creating new social programs. But at the end of the day, we have seen both parties increase the debt over the past several decades. It has increased more under Republicans in recent presidencies. And that's something that, you know, doesn't always get talked about, in part because Republicans have done a good job of messaging when it comes to, you know, talking about the deficits and the debt when they're out of power, and really making it harder for Democratic presidents and Congresses to move forward with the kinds of social spending they want to do, because there's this question about, are we increasing the size of government too much? Are we spending too much money? Is the debt going up too much? And it's something that we don't hear as much about when Republicans are trying to cut taxes, in part because they can tell people, we're cutting your taxes, we're letting you keep more of your money, and you can decide what to do with it, even though the deficits and the debt continue to go up when that happens.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Tolu Olorunipa, political investigations and enterprise reporter at The Washington Post, with us today for a weekly roundup of some of the top stories in national politics. Coming up, the January 6th committee, who is testifying, who is not. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see more Trump administration officials cooperate with House investigators? Some trials related to that coming up, I believe, next summer. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our look at the top stories in national politics. Tolu Olorunipa is with us from the Washington Post. You can join in at 800-642-1234. On the table now, the January 6th committee investigations. And coming up, a look at conflicts, accusation of anti-Muslim bias among members of Congress. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Tolu, the January 6th investigation committee in the House. We've got Mark Meadows now, former chief of staff for President Trump, at one point said he would come in for a deposition, shared some information. Now he's back out. What's going on?
Well, it seems like he realized for his own political future, especially after he just came out with a major book that the former president was not happy with, that if he was seen cooperating with the January 6th committee that former President Trump very much dislikes, that he might be a persona non grata among Republicans going forward. He, you know, in his own words, he said that, you know, he started and wanted to cooperate with the committee, but he saw that they were not respecting executive privilege, so he decided to pull back. But it's pretty clear that, you know, at the moment he had been in the doghouse with the former president, who was his boss, and he decided to pull back and not engage with the Democrats. Now, he's not doing this without risk. Democrats have already called for charges to be filed, contempt charges to be filed against previous individuals who defied their subpoenas and defied their calls for them to come testify and answer questions as part of this committee's work. So he could potentially find himself, you know, under that kind of prosecution, because Congress does have some power to try to compel testimony. So it is a kind of a tricky situation that he finds himself in, but it seems like the tide is turning in some ways against this committee, as a growing number of people who said that they were going to cooperate or who indicated they were going to cooperate are really turning away and deciding to defy their authority and essentially say that, you know, well, we'll see you in court. So this could be a battle that ends up playing out for several months, if not years. And that's not what this committee wants. They wanted to wrap up this work long before the midterms take place. And the court battles could just end up dragging this thing out for quite a while, maybe even until past the midterms, where Democrats could lose control of Congress and the entire investigation could be shut down.
There are reports that people on former Vice President Mike Pence's team, including Mark Short, a chief of staff with him on January 6th, that he was hiding out from people chanting "Hang Mike Pence" in the Capitol building, are cooperating. What are we hearing there, and why might they have something to offer?
Well, we do know that, especially people who worked for Mike Pence, that, you know, they're not in the best, they don't all have the best opinion of former President Trump right now, because not only did, you know, Trump not call off the mob and the rioters when his own vice president was in danger and people were shouting, "Hang Mike Pence." But even since, you know, he was asked by Jonathan Carl of ABC News for a book that came out recently, whether or not, you know, he thought that went too far, that the "Hang Mike Pence" chance, or whether he thought his vice president was in danger. And he essentially said, you know, he understood the people who were chanting that. He understood why people were angry, and he still believed that Mike Pence did the wrong thing by, you know, essentially allowing the certification of the election to go forward. So I wouldn't be surprised if we do see some people who worked for Mike Pence willing to cooperate with this committee, in part because they may feel less fealty to the former president, because he's shown very little loyalty to his vice president in the aftermath of January 6th.
Talking to Tolu Olorunipa from The Washington Post, looking at some of the top stories in national politics. Let's move on now. This is a strange dispute. A Colorado member of Congress, Lauren Boebert, caught on tape and elsewhere making anti-Muslim remarks about some of her House colleagues. I want to give a listen to Representative Ayanna Pressley behind an effort to strip Representative Boebert of her committee assignments in response. Here she is at a press conference. This was earlier today.
For a member of Congress to repeatedly and unapologetically use hateful, racist, and Islamophobic tropes towards a Muslim colleague is dangerous. This sort of toxic behavior has no place in the halls of Congress, and it diminishes the honor of the institution that we all serve in.
Can you remind us of some of the backstory on this dispute, Tolu?
Well, we did see a video of Congresswoman Boebert using some anti-Semitic language back during a town hall or an event back in her district, where she essentially, you know, made up a story saying that she ran into Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, one of the couple of Muslim congresswomen in Congress, and, you know, she said that she was afraid, essentially, that Congresswoman Omar might have, you know, been plotting some kind of terrorist attack on the Congress. Now, she did it in a joking manner, but these are the kinds of things that, you know, really have been condemned not only by Democrats, but also by some Republicans as not only Islamophobic, but also, you know, just cruel and mean and not in keeping with the tradition of, you know, geniality in Congress. That once, you know, it once was a place where, you know, people could work across the aisle and there wasn't this kind of nastiness taking place. And now it seems like Democrats are looking to once again strip the committee assignments from a Republican member of Congress. It's been something that had not been done in the past. You know, parties used to rely on one another to discipline their own people, but that hasn't been happening. And now, you know, Democrats are in power. They've used that power to strip a couple of other members of the Republican Party from their assignments because of their incendiary rhetoric. And Republicans are already saying that, you know, if we get back in power, especially if we win during the midterms, we're going to come back and we're going to use this power to strip some Democrats from their assignments because we don't like the things that they have said, or we don't like how they've conducted themselves outside of the halls of Congress. So it is a very nasty and acrimonious situation, and it does appear that it's only getting worse.
Is there a consensus among Democrats so far, especially, I guess, among House leaders among Democrats, so who would have to move this forward to strip a member of Congress of committee assignments?
There has not been much pushback, at least publicly, and the progressive wing is really taking a run at this, essentially saying that, you know, Democrats need to stick together. They're a diverse party. They need to make sure that even the members of the party that aren't part of a large constituency, you know, members who may be part of a minority group, have the backing of the rest of their party. So we haven't seen a lot of pushback from leaders. It's a very delicate situation because, you know, the leadership of the Democratic Party does not want to air some of its divisions within its caucus at a time like this, where they would rather be seen, you know, unifying against Islamophobia, unifying around and supporting, you know, one of their members, someone who gets a lot of death threats and is the victim of a lot of attacks from the public. And so for that reason, even if there is some angst about, you know, moving forward to strip yet another member of Congress from his or her committee assignments over something they said outside of Congress. It's not being heard. You're not hearing a lot of pushback from Democratic leaders. And we'll see where this goes. Maybe it fades. Maybe it's not something that they end up doing. But there does seem to be some fire on the side of the progressives to try to push forward and get something done and make sure that there are consequences for this kind of rhetoric.
And on the Republican side, there was a flare-up between a Republican colleague and and Boebert and others involved in this last week. Are we seeing much from Republican House leadership to try to rein things in here?
We're not seeing much, and I think in part it's because they are looking at 2022. They also want to be seen as unified. They don't want to air some of the divisions within their party, even though those divisions are starting to, you know, air themselves. A lot of Republican leaders, especially Kevin McCarthy, the minority leader in the House, is just trying to go along to get along, just trying to keep everyone on board long enough to potentially win back the House and get the Speaker's gavel. And those are two different things. If Republicans win back the House, it's not a given that Kevin McCarthy would be the leader, and he needs to keep his caucus together. He needs to keep his caucus behind him. That's why you've seen him very reluctant to discipline or to speak negatively about some of his more outspoken members of Congress, because he does not necessarily want to lose their votes, because if he does, he could end up not being the Speaker of the House if they win back the majority. He could find himself on the outs, which would be an embarrassing end to his political career.
Tolu, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
You got it. Thank you.
That's Tolu Olorunipa, political investigations and enterprise reporter at The Washington Post. He was with us today for our weekly look at some of the top stories in the nation's capital.